Chapter 14 Shade Hall. The hunting party moved through the forest from the pool. "What did you find?" Drusha asked Nail.
"A ruin," said Nail, "deep in the undergrowth. From the scale of it, it may have been a fortress, but nothing stood there for a long time."
"How long?"
"Very long. Hundreds of years."
"That doesn't fit the data we have," said Drusha.
"That happens a lot in my line of work," Nail replied, "unless you're prepared to scare yourself silly and believe it does fit the data. Just not the bits of the data you're comfortable thinking about."
"Garifar's Shade Hall?" Drusha laughed nervously.
"I've seen worse things," said Nail.
He paused and reached into his backpack. He held out a small handgun to Drusha.
"It's the one I took off you," he said. "I took the liberty of cleaning it and loading it."
"Wasn't it loaded already?"
"These are better bullets," said Nail. "Customized. From my special stash. I thought you might need something."
"I'm not really a gun person," said Drusha.
"Do me a favor and take it anyway, Magas," said Nail.
The stones that had once been a fortress lay tumbled together under the trees, swathed in moss and climbing creepers. The mist hung heavy and still. It had been a place of significant size. Some of the stone blocks were massive and suggested a heavy outer wall. But even these slabs, their edges worn smooth by years of erosion, were half buried in the loam. There was no longer even a sense of any ground plan that could be recognized.
"If this is Kestra," said Ordla Jaff, "then Kestra is not the site we are looking for. This isn't just derelict. It has been vacant for hundreds, if not thousands, of years."
"Audla's very pragmatic," Nail said to Drusha, sidelong. "She likes to deal in facts. She's not very taken with other possibilities."
His grin suggested he was sharing a joke with Drusha, but Drusha didn't find that reassuring. The idea that their speculation was correct, and some kind of supernatural truth lay beneath their immediate physical reality, was not reassuring.
"I heard your comment, Harlan," Jaff said. "The information provided by Magos Drusha asserted that Kestra had been occupied by Draven Sark and in use as recently as a few decades ago, but this intelligence was imparted as a byproduct of an auto-seance. The warp lies and deceives. Its whispers cannot be trusted, or at least cannot be understood on face value. The Magos' encounter with the ghost of Ezik Fargul is open to many interpretations, not least that it was utter ungrounded fancy."
She walked through the undergrowth to a nearby tree and ran her hand across its bark.
"This is a southern spur pine, is it not, Magos?"
Drusha nodded.
"A mature specimen," said Jaff. "To reach this size, it would take, what, 300 years standard?"
"At least," Drusha admitted.
"Yet it, and others like it, are growing within the bounds of the site," said Jaff. "Kestra didn't collapse and perish in the last few decades. It has been gone long enough for 300 old trees to grow up through its bones."
Eisenhorn glanced at Vorier, who was scanning the area with a portable Auspex of a type Drusha hadn't seen before.
"Nothing residual, sir," Vorier said. "Nothing electromagnetic or ectomagnetic. No background psionics. Of course, this device isn't as sensitive as you."
The Inquisitor nodded. He limped through the ruin a little way until he was standing a short distance from them. Then he stopped and closed his eyes. Drusha and the others waited. Birdsong in the neighboring glades died away to silence. The breeze stilled, and there was a palpable drop in air temperature.
"Remain calm," Vorier whispered to Drusha, Max, and the deputies. Max looked deeply uncomfortable.
"I'm going to circle the perimeter," she said.
Vorier nodded, and Max moved away quietly with Cronil and Edda in tow. Drusha got the feeling she was simply finding an excuse not to be present. It certainly wasn't comfortable. Though the sun continued to wink through the tree canopy above, light in the glade had somehow dimmed to an eerie dusk. Drusha realized his breath was steaming slightly in the cold air. He saw frost dusting the tree trunks and the ground cover leaves like powdered sugar. He looked up at the sun, twinkling beyond the leaves, to steady his nerves. The light slowly returned, the temperature rose, and birdsong resumed. Eisenhorn sighed.
"Nothing," he said.
"Well," said Jaff, "I propose we return to Helter and make a new plan."
"There are no birds singing,"
said Drusha quietly.
"What, sir?"
asked Garifar. "Around this site," said Drusha. "No birdsong. You can hear it in the nearby areas, but not here."
He gestured towards a stand of trees outside the limits of the old ruin.
"I can see red beaks," he said, "and little-tailed skeins. There, up in the branches, there, see? But nothing comes this way. We've been here 10 minutes, and I haven't seen a single bird enter or cross this area."
"What does that mean?" asked Vorier.
Drusha shrugged and looked up at the sun again.
There was movement in the undergrowth, and Max returned with the other two deputies.
"There's a track," she said, "100 meters that way. Looks like it runs all the way down from the mountain trail. It's been in use. Wheeled vehicles. ATVs, I'd guess. Someone's been visiting this place, often and recently."
"But the track runs out," said Edda, 10 meters short of the ruin. "It just stops. Then thick undergrowth."
"Well then," said Jaff, "the visitors, hunters, I imagine, came that close and no closer."
"There's no turning circle," said Max. "No crush marks or compressed vegetation at the end of the trail where a heavy vehicle turned around.
I don't know about you, Mamsel Jaff, but I don't drive an ATV several kilometers down a very rough track and then just reverse back the way I came."
"Perhaps we put a watch on the head of the track," suggested Vorier. "See if these visitors come back."
"You're very quiet, Drusha," said Eisenhorn.
Drusha was still looking up at the trees.
"The trees are growing wrong," he said.
"Expand," said Eisenhorn.
"All the trees growing within the ruin site," he said. "They're the same species as in the surrounding woods, but they have a slight inclination. You see it if you look. Growth patterning. It's to do with the elements. Prevailing wind directions, angle to the sun in different seasons, soil, rainfall. Like the hair on a man's scalp, growing in a natural pattern."
"I don't really see it," said Eisenhorn.
"It's the sort of thing I'm trained to notice," said Drusha. "Trust me. The thing is, the trees on this site are all growing to a slightly different pattern. It's subtle, but distinct."
"And what would cause that?" asked Eisenhorn.
Drusha frowned.
"It's like," he began. "It's like they are growing in a different environment, responding to a different sun."
Eisenhorn looked over at Garifar.
"In the old stories for children, deputy," he asked, "how did an outsider find a shade hall? How did an outsider enter one?"
Garifar looked puzzled.
"Well, sir, they just appeared," he replied. "You could enter them when they were there, or you were taken there by the monsters who dwelt inside.
Nothing else? No folk-tale rhyme or incantation?"
"I don't know," Garifar said. "There was one story about a fellow who called one up, I suppose like an incantation, but I don't know what words you'd use."
"Words," murmured Eisenhorn.
"Do you mean that language thing?" Drusha asked.
"I think experimentation would be ill-advised," said Jaff.
"Your objection is noted," said Eisenhorn. "Sark's home was well hidden, unnaturally well hidden. It was a place of retreat, of escape. It was, in literal terms, occulted. This may be a false trail, or it may be that we are standing on the threshold of Sark's Hall. I'm not leaving until we have exhausted all possibilities of making a definitive determination."
"Sir, it is a considerable risk," said Jaff.
"You said it yourself, Audler," replied Eisenhorn. "The word Kestra. You said the name translated as a forbidden speaking place, or place of unholy speech. If the cognitae are hiding in the Carinines, they have built a place of seclusion and retreat, and proofed it against discovery, using their darkest skills."
"I also stated that it's not a physical location, sir," said Jaff.
"Not at the moment," said Eisenhorn. "Not all the time, perhaps. I'd like everyone to prepare themselves. If this works, even in part, there may be some discomfort and disorientation."
Nail gripped Drusha firmly and securely by the upper arm. Drusha looked at his hand in surprise.
"What?" he started to say.
"Stick with me," Nail said.
Jaff was objecting again. Eisenhorn ignored her, raised his hands, and said, something. It was a word, or at least it seemed to be. Drusha didn't know it or understand it. He'd never heard it before in his life, and he'd never wanted to hear it again.